I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita.
Good day, Vashon Island. How are you? I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies. It is a travel story show. And today, we have one of my dearest, most lovely friends. His name is F.L. Damon, and he has been on this show one time before. And he and I love to talk about travel together, and we have traveled together. And I hope to travel soon to see him and his lovely wife and kids. But who knows when that's going to happen. F.L., You traveled a lot, like myself, around the same age, and we're about the same age. Do you turn 50 next year?
I do.
God, yes. So do I. I know it's weird.
That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. what was I going to say about it? Oh, just that you and I have a lot of funny stories that I think are similar in the spirit of what was happening as a young person. In like the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, doing a lot of traveling. And this is, you wrote a beautiful piece for us about one of your travels. Will you tell us a little bit about it and then start your story?
Yeah, so this is a continuation of one that I read the last time I was on, where my friend Ben and I, who he and I grew up in Michigan together, we went to Europe. The summer after my freshman year in college. And we backpacked and visited friends that we knew or people that we had heard of. And this is about us getting to Norway.
A place I would love to see.
You should. Yeah. It is magical.
Adam's family is, they don't really know because his grandfather was adopted, but they think that they're Swedish and or Norwegian. And it's a place that he loves to sort of reminisce about and like, what are those little creatures? The gnomes and all that stuff. He loves all that folklore that comes from that area.
The Tomten. Yeah. You need to tell him, I didn't know that, but you need to tell Adam that he has to make a decision because they don't like each other.
Oh, well, he did.
The Norwegians make a lot of jokes at the expense of the Swedish.
Do they really?
Yeah, another name for stupid is, oh, that's so Swedish.
No.
Yeah.
That's so harsh. God, funny because the Swedish people seem really on top of their game.
I think it's left over from World War II, honestly.
Were they not on the same side?
They were not.
Oh, gosh, my history is failing.
The Swedes kind of let things happen.
That they shouldn't have?
Yeah.
Oh, bad Swedes. All right. Well, without any further ado, Sir F.L. Damon, would you please read your story?
I will.
Excellent.
At age 18 or 19, much of the world, at least the Western world, has traveled. The Australians are everywhere. But growing up in Michigan, like most of the United States, one doesn't know that. Indiana is an adventure. Canada is exotic. We would do better to travel outside our country to visit the dangers of Mexico. When Ben and I got on that ferry from London to the Hook of Holland as we embarked to the top of Norway, we were privileged, naive, and out for fun. It was an early morning, gray but calm. The ferry was enormous, by far the largest ship of any kind that I had been on while it was actually moving. I grew up sailing, have relatives in San Diego, so open water was no big deal, but the ocean that far out from land was a new sight, at once immense and powerful and tranquil with waves that rolled up forever and then slowly down like country road hills. It wasn't a terribly long ride, 4-something hours. I know we walked around, took turns guarding our backpacks in the largely empty sitting area. But mostly it was the sea, a magical view. When 14, I had taken a ferry to Corfu from Dubrovnik, but that was with parents. This was my moment of discovery. It was a bit windy. I walked around the deck and found a structure that undoubtedly held lifeboats and jackets, etc., that blocked the wind, and sat down behind it to stare out. Nick! Suddenly, there was a guy from college standing right in front of me. Travel. Connections. Small world. Adventure. Once you begin traveling, these things happen. Nick and I caught up. He was headed to Amsterdam for the remainder of the summer. We weren't good friends, but more operators within the same circle, but the connection made there was a light that marked a moment that still burns. It's what makes me hope for this world, that you can connect with people and find something common, or interesting, or unexpected, and ultimately beautiful. That ferry was a highlight of our trip because of that encounter. Ben and I then managed to catch a train that took us to Copenhagen, where we switched again and headed up to the top of Norway. There was no such thing as mobile phones, only paper maps, some documents that indicated times of changes, etc., and what seems now as luck. Ben and I perfected sleep, reading, cards, and starving. The ferry and train took the better part of 4 days. We had that pack of cigarettes, some money that ran out very quickly. The exchange was awful. We lived on some crackers, salami, and the cigarettes, and the self-invented extreme rummy. Luckily, the train had slide-down seats that we turned into our little den. Our passports hung around our necks. We kept the windows at our feet so we could watch industry, forests, and hills fly by. Every once in a while, the shock of the slide of the doors and the onrush of noise from the hall would jar us from a game or sleep with a man requesting passports and tickets, then back again. We arrived at the train station near our destination on the mainland, but that is relative. We headed to Stamsund, a large village on the Lofoten Islands, a car ride of some time. Paul and his mother, Liv Marie, picked us up. We drove to their house. Through island villages, by the sea, the mountains, and through the light, the sheer otherworldliness for us was stunning. Our hunger was forgotten. Paul's mother was so lovely, instantly warm and caring and friendly, it washed over us, setting us at ease. We had a feast that night, met Carl, his brother, and slept to some strange hour the next day. It was summer, and we were 200 kilometers north of the Arctic Circle. There was no dark. For example, we climbed a mountain at 3 a.m., a beautiful long trek up to a place where suddenly there were 2 feet on either side protecting you from a drop of thousands of feet. That was the first and only time I was scared of heights. The path connected to a large area at the top, but you had to walk to it. I was terrified. Paul's dog and friend Georg were with us. Everyone watched as I made it across. I was so happy to sit on the other side. The dog nuzzled me, began to roll around. It was comforting. And then the dog rolled too far. We yelled, and it caught itself and didn't fall. Didn't fall. We could see forever. There were islands on either side, with mountains and then the vast expanse of the ocean. It was 3 a.m. and sunny. It was a dream. The dream continued with day and night no longer making sense. Some things were open, others were not. Depending who went to sleep and who got up when. Paul took us to a Norwegian Bacchanalian night event where the twilight lit high school seniors who had just graduated as they ran from lawn to lawn drinking, dancing, singing, and eating dried fish from clotheslines. Laughter bounced in the forever sun as they reveled. Though they weren't nymphs or dancing mythical creatures, their joy and airy happiness was contagious. Contagious enough that we too grabbed a piece of fish and bit into it. The shock and instant full-body dislike brought more laughter from Paul. Another day we went to a boat, a little larger than a dinghy with a small motor on it. We were to fish. Ben, George, Paul, Carl, and I, we barely fit in that boat, but we head out into the frigid water. We did jump in when we returned, but we're in and out. We putted from the spit of the land out into the rolling ocean, not terribly far. We were told it was deep. It looked deep. I was given a heavy line with a leader and a tangle of hooks on the end, nothing like I had used before. I was shown how to straighten it out, with laughter at my confusion of a line that had four or five hooks on it, separated by maybe 2 feet of line. I was given a small ball of weight to attach and then bait for each hook. The motor was cut, and we dropped the lines over. I grew up fly fishing, casting, trolling, and bobbing. I leaned way out on my belly, dangling worms or grasshoppers, tempting rock bass and perch. You learn to feel the tug, the nibble, the bite, and yell, "I got one! It's going to be a keeper. It feels huge!" Often to reveal a tiny fish pulling 10 times its weight, or at least revealing your well-developed imagination. This was not that. The weight was several pounds. There was no up and down bobbing, and we let out a ton of line. So after a while, "How do you know if you have a fish on?" "Pull it up," I was told. It definitely felt heavier. I knew it felt heavier, though I expected to see only the weight on the end. It took a long time. We put out a lot of line, and then a fish. Not a very big fish, but one on the first hook. I kept pulling up, and then another, a bit bigger. And suddenly I had a cartoon. Each successive hook had a bigger fish. We were all laughing. And it was like that for everyone. So many fish. We went back to Paul's, and his mother made the most incredible fish stew I had ever had. I had never had one before. And it was delicious. Something about visiting others in other countries allows one to taste things one had never tasted before. Sometimes things, they could be seen as disgusting if had at home, but here at that table, fish and fish heads floating in the most exquisite smelling stew of herbs, tomatoes, and potatoes. There was nothing disgusting about it. I was taught how to find a cheek and eat it. Delicate, buttery, and small. I even had an eye, but that was more not to my liking, though not revolting. Just not something great. We spoke, laughed, and we built connections. We sat at their table, warmed in the stew, the night blazing with sun, talking, laughing, and still that stew, the herbs, the fish, the smells, it is with me now, 31 years later.
Traveling in a fight out. Trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, "Do you come from a land down under? A women go and men plunder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover."
Thank you, FL. That was a really beautiful story. Are you still friends with the guy in Norway?
Yeah. No, in fact, for my mom's 80th birthday, he stayed up and Zoom called in because he had been an exchange student in high school with us.
That's how you met him?
Yeah.
I kind of figured it was something like that, yeah. I mean, how would a kid from rural Norway find you in Michigan? Unless it's an exchange program.
I still don't really understand how he did. He joined the Rotary Club thing and came to this tiny, I mean, our town that I grew up in was so the middle of nowhere. I have no idea why we ever got exchange students.
Charlevoix?
Because, yeah.
Well, I mean, it is clubs like that, Rotary Club, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's whoever's active in it.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was such culture shock.
Oh, God, I can imagine. Well, I mean, you know, when I was an exchange student in Italy, and the program, it wasn't Rotary, it was another program called Offsci, but they didn't tell me until this is so crazy when I think back on it, because the world is so different now with technology, but they didn't know exactly where we were going to go. And I didn't know, like, I literally left Chicago with a group of exchange students and no one knew exactly where they were going until we got to Belgium. Like, we flew into Belgium and then finally I'm on a bus, right? I knew I was going somewhere in Italy and I'm on a bus, and then they give me like a packet that has like information about the family and like, and pictures of them, and then finally like where it was. And I'd never even heard of Sardinia before. I was like, what? I'm going to some weird island? I was terrified.
Oh, but man, you made some great friends.
Yes, I did.
That's an amazing place.
I did, yeah. Well, I was just thinking of that as you were talking about being that far out in the sea, about like how crazy it is to not, I know those giant ferries, and to be out that far is still pretty intimidating.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I did grow up sailing, and the Great Lakes are huge like that, but it's just a different type of wave. And that was what struck me on that ferry, was just this long up and long down instead of this choppy thing. Like, it's like the sound is different than the open ocean.
Yeah, oh, totally. Right? Yeah, it's so much more mellow than the open ocean. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I was thinking about when you were talking about how it's light at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I've only experienced something like that in Ireland, like in spring. It'll be, I remember we were walking out of a bar and it was like 11:30 at night and it was totally light outside. And of course we'd been in this dark bar by a fireplace and I wasn't thinking about it. And of course, you know, we're drinking more beers than we probably should. And then I come outside and it's totally bright. It is so trippy.
Yeah.
It's a really weird concept. I can imagine hiking at 3 o'clock in the morning would be nuts.
It was so amazing. I mean, and it was so long ago, as it turns out.
Yeah.
It's still right with me.
Well, it's a beautiful story, FL. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
You bet. I have a little story that I'm going to read here, and it's a short one, but it is pertaining to what's happening in the world right now. And it's entitled Karl Marx. One of the most beautiful things about being young is the absolute feeling that you can change the world, that you can, in fact, make this a better place than from where you came. July of 1986, I had just finished a year of school in the countryside of Ireland, a year I had wished would never come to an end, but it did, and that July, I left Dublin on a flight to London. I was alone, but so overwhelmingly excited to see this city with its history steeped in contradictions. I arrived, and I found my way to an area of the city called Earl's Court, where I found a dingy room. It was dark, with heavy drapes that muffled the sound of the traffic below. There was an ancient carpet with spiral designs, but mostly I remember eating a lot of peanut butter on bread in this room, sitting half on the bed. There were lots of shops and a myriad of things to find. I was 15, which comes with so many thoughts of the world, big picture thoughts and ideologies of how this place should be, of how the world should be equal and fair to everyone. I met a couple of other youths, a guy who traveled with his violin, about 17 years old, and a girl who was about the same age. She was a bit of an 80s hippie, which held the same values as the previous one, but with more colors of dyed hair to express oneself more clearly. Red was the big color choice of the time, a color I would later have for years to come, with all the variations from deep red to strawberry blonde and everything in between. We all got along so well. They showed me around London. We ate, we laughed, but mostly we talked about politics, or what we thought we understood about them at the time. Maggie Thatcher was in office in Great Britain at the time, and none of us were fans of hers or her conservativeness. Eventually, we made our way down a sunny, tree-lined street into the Highgate Cemetery, where Karl Marx had been laid to rest so many years before. My friend played his violin as we approached the gravesite. We were like a merry band of wayward kids prancing happily. His music and the sight of the massive tombstone with a giant bust of his woolly bearded face and a mane of wavy hair was truly a sight to behold. Somewhere in all of my forever ago put away mementos, there is a photo of me wearing black leggings and an oversized white t-shirt tied on one side, with my arms outstretched in front of this giant head. And there I stood with my whole life before me, believing wholeheartedly in the doctrine of Marx. Many years later, my ideals would change slightly. Not in the same way that a baby boomer who played a hippie in the 1960s becomes conservative, but not entirely away from the belief that there should be equality for everyone. The photo was placed forever on our fridge at home. It made my father laugh every time he looked at it. He was not a follower of any of these beliefs. He had, in fact, voted for Reagan previous to this. Not to my happiness, but that was another time. As we are on the cusp of our own election in a few short weeks, I want to believe the youthful gumption of people is still inside of them, that burning feeling to make change and be a positive force in this life exists. And most importantly, that the conservative right does not take this election. Fell, are you still there?
I am.
Awesome.
That was great.
Thank you very much. I have to find that photo because it is really funny. I have like really just short, choppy, you know, punky hair and just me and Karl Marx. It was a good time. I have a question for you. So, FL, yeah. You live in Washington, D.C. How does it feel now getting ready for this election? I mean, is it like...
Well, I mean, it's so... Oh, that's hard. I think we're so insulated here because everything is always political, right?
Right.
So the... And if you go around the county I live in, it's hundreds and hundreds, well, thousands of Biden signs. Right. Which is hard to it's not real.
Right.
Right.
Because you're it's the same with Vashon. It's not real. You know, 99% of the population is going to vote for Biden, and then you leave here, and it just goes all Trump country.
So I, speaking to my mother, you know,
Michigan.
In Michigan. And, you know, she's been working, she's 80 years old, gosh, and she's been working, you know, trying to help get out the boats and do all of these things. And this young woman who's, I don't know, in her 30s, mm-hmm. young compared to my mom, asked her that after the election, would she continue, because they're planning to mobilize some sort of thing, because they're all pretty scared about what's going to happen. The people who were threatening to assassinate the governor, they're from that area.
Wow.
And the Proud Boys have a bunch of, you know, they have a fairly large presence up there. So you don't, you know, so you trying to balance those two things is really hard. I don't know. I don't know. If I were betting, I don't think I would bet.
On this election, you mean?
Yeah.
I know, me neither.
I think the one unfortunate and sure thing that you can bet on is there's going to be violence all across this country.
No matter what happens.
And that's really sad. You know, so what struck me is you're talking about Karl Marx, and whether you agree with Karl Marx or not,
sure,
the difference between Karl Marx and our current president is one was an intellectual.
That's an understatement.
And this is our problem. I mean, there are conservatives who are intellectual, and I don't mind talking to them except when they support our current president, because that's my political belief, and I feel like this is a different time.
Yeah.
But when growing up and arguing about Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, you could have a constructive, you know, discourse about something because people were coming at it from an intellectual
viewpoint. Yeah.
You know, viewpoint. This is a thought problem. How do we solve things? Where do we want to take the country? Now, that's just a crazy narcissist. I mean, it's awful.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know what? We got, today's, what, the 21st? We've got about, 2 weeks left, and let's everybody just keep fingers crossed that it goes in a positive direction. And, FL, I want to thank you so much for coming on. As always, it's great to hear your voice.
Well, you deserve, I mean, this is your program that you and Jeff and whoever else put together. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Well, I'd love to have you back on another time. So keep writing your stories for us.
Okay.
We're loving them.
Love you.
Love you too.
Bye.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much, Voice of Vashon. This is Megan Hastings, and this has been the Cats and Jammer Follies, the travel story show. Please join us again next week. Who knows where we're going to go in this big, bad world? Hopefully somewhere good.